Good morning, everybody. We're just going to go ahead and get started in a minute, so if we can start wrapping up conversations and take your seats, that'd be great. Thank you.
This is an audio timestamp for the stream and record. This is the GTLD Registry Stakeholders Group meeting in Hall 3B, scheduled to begin at 9 a.m. All record and streams are now live.
If everyone would like to take a seat, we are ready to start. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining the Registry Stakeholder Group meeting. This is Sherry Stubbs. I'm the Secretariat for the Registries. Before we start, just a reminder, when speaking, to please announce your name and affiliation for purposes of the recording, the transcript, and those that will be participating remotely. As of right now, we have no one on remote participation, but they will be. So. Oh, we do? I beg your pardon. We have Carolyn Hoover from DOCOA. Barbara Knight from VeriSign, and Carrie Karp from, oh, they're on Adobe Connect. Well, good. We've got a lot of people. So with that being said, Keith, would you like to start introductions of the Registry Stakeholder Group officers? And we would like all Registry Stakeholder Group members to just briefly introduce themselves. Thank you.
So thank you, Sherry. This is Keith Drazik. Welcome, everybody, to the GTLD Registry Stakeholder Group meeting of July 16th, 2013, in Durban, South Africa. So we'll go around and make introductions of the Registry Stakeholder Group reps and also the NTAG Executive Committee, and we'll go ahead and get started. So this is Keith Drazik, VeriSign and Chair.
And Paul Diaz from Public Interest Registry, Vice Chair.
Jeff Newman with Newstar, GNSO Council Rep.
Jonathan Robinson, Affilius Council Rep and Council Chair.
Liz Finberg, PIR.
Gustavo Lozano, ICANN.
Wendy Prophet, ICANN.
Josh Zetland, Dot Construction.
Liz Sweezy, Fairwinds Partners.
Sarah Falvey, CRR.
Tim Switzer, Dot Green, NTAG Chair.
Donna Austin, International Domain Registry.
Adrian Kinderis, International Domain Registry.
Amadeo Abril, CORE, an observer, that should move to a full member one of these days.
I think today.
I don't know.
Reg Levy, Minds and Machines.
Staten Hammock, United TLD.
Chuck Gomes, VeriSign.
Roy Dykes, Newstar.
Judy Song Marshall, Newstar.
John Evett Donuts.
Rubinsky, Nick.pr.
Russ Weinstein, ICANN staff.
Okay, thanks everyone. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to introduce themselves, a registry stakeholder group member or NTAG executive committee?
Ken Stubbs, Phileas.
Mike Pelage, .coop.
Francisco Arias, ICANN staff.
Cyrus Namazi, ICANN.
Okay, thanks everybody, and welcome. Welcome again. And we should acknowledge and welcome Cyrus and Francisco joining us here. We'll just get through a couple of administrative points before getting right into the agenda with ICANN staff. First, and I think it's, this is a special day as far as an opportunity for the registry stakeholder group meeting, or the registry stakeholder group to welcome new members. With the signing of new GTLD registry agreements, we have the pleasure today of welcoming ARI, CORE, and Donuts, International Domain Registry, CORE and Donuts, as full members. Typically, we have a we will have a process where new members will need to fill out another form to provide additional information. We will make sure that that form is distributed to the three of you, as well as any new future members. So we're going to provide an interim sort of exception, but welcome you all as full members today. So welcome. So as far as voting, we do have a provision in our charter that says a voting member in the registry stakeholder group cannot be a voting member in another stakeholder group or constituency. So to the extent that someone is going to vote or wants to participate in any voting, we need to make sure that there's a declaration that the organization does not participate in voting in other stakeholder groups or constituencies. Jeff, you want to touch on that?
Yeah, it's the organization or any of its affiliates, and that's defined pretty much the same way as it's defined in the registry agreement. And the NTAG does not count as another constituency or stakeholder group. There may be issues when you go to the NTAG meeting, though, if you vote here, but for that's not one that you need to declare.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. And not putting anyone on the spot here right now, but it's just something that we'll need to clarify. I saw Adrian Amadeo.
Adrian Kinderis, International Domain Registry. Am I able to declare that verbally, or is that something you want in writing?
It's something that we will require in writing once the form is provided to you,
okay.
But it's something you can do verbally today.
Yeah, so we have no other voting rights than any other stakeholder group, and we will be a voting member of the registry stakeholder group. We being International Domain Registry. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Adrian. Amadeo.
CORE is currently still a registrar. We are in the process of creating a new separate entity, but in the meantime, we will not participate in any vote until we had all this solved.
Okay. Thank you very much, Amadeo. Okay, John, go ahead.
Yeah, Donuts and its affiliates do not vote in any other stakeholder group or constituency.
Okay. Thanks, John. All right. Thanks. I think we've taken care of the administrative business that we need to at the beginning of the meeting. Sherry, is there anything else that we need to touch on before we move to the full agenda with ICANN staff?
No, I think we're fine. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Sherry. Okay. So with that, let's go ahead and move to sort of our conversation with ICANN staff. Most of it's on the new GTLD program. No surprise. Cyrus and Francisco, welcome again. Thank you for making time to meet with us. We've got a very full agenda, as you can see from the information that I sent you previously and also that's on the agenda on the screen. So why don't we just get right into it? We've got three primary issues or sort of buckets of discussion, and I'm going to look to my fellow stakeholder group members and folks in the audience, and certainly welcome NTAG members to participate fully in these conversations. These obviously are issues that impact you directly. So trademark clearinghouse implementation is bucket number one. Discussion around the PIC DRP is bucket number two. And the third bucket is pre-delegation testing. I think these are really the three key issues that we want to talk about today. So why don't we just go ahead and get right into it. First bucket is trademark clearinghouse implementation. We've got four issues that we've identified under here. Trademark plus 50, testing, IDN, and IDN variants, although variants could also be a separate heading, and a question about the IBM master agreement. So I'm going to open it up right now to see if anybody would like to take the lead on any of these four issues. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, can I just add a quick fifth as well, which is URS? And I'll be happy to start off some of these. On the trademark plus 50, really most of that's not a registry issue, except to the extent that the implementation of that on the front end could delay the actual start of Sunrise and start the launch processes. So the issue here is not about trademark plus 50 as a policy or anything like that. It's really about a question about when will ICANN come out with the rules and procedures, processes and procedures for the trademark owners to enter the plus 50 so that we can get everything kind of kicked in.
Thanks, Jeff. So this is Karen Lentz from ICANN staff. The answer is to when the rules will be out there pretty soon. I have a document that's in the process of being posted now, and Deloitte, I believe, is going to go through this in the trademark clearinghouse session tomorrow. So the rules in terms of how the rights holders go and enter the additional labels will be out there. In terms of the timing for the registries, it is the functionality should be there before anybody is operating claims. In other words, that the capacity for those labels to be added and the rules for them to have been added is scheduled to be there before before anybody operates a claims period. The labels, in terms of implementation, the labels are not treated any differently from a technical perspective than any of the existing labels that are associated with a clearinghouse record. So you put in your mark, it generates the clearinghouse generates matching labels that are associated with that record. What this functionality does is allow a rights holder, if they have a UDRP decision or a court decision indicating that that particular mark that's in the record has been used or registered abusively according to such and such domain name labels, and those can both be verified, then those labels will be added to the record and have the same the same way as other labels that are associated with the record. Only difference being that they can only be eligible for claims service. They won't be part of Sunrise. Does that help?
Yeah, I think, thanks. This is Jeff Newman. I guess if we look at the timeline that was put up by Christine yesterday, I think it was Sunrise possibly in September, and I guess the claims would then possibly be in October. So you don't see any of this as, just to confirm, you don't see any of these rules or any processes to get in the way of an October claims? Good. That was, I guess, for the transcript, no.
No.
I don't know if anyone's got questions on that.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff, and thanks, Karen. Thanks for joining us this morning. Appreciate you being here. Any other questions or comments on the trademark plus 50? Jonathan, go ahead.
Mine's just a more generic, very brief comment, Keith. To the extent, I think sometimes I hear that something's going to be implemented in time for us to utilize it. But insofar as it's possible, we need, as we've said before, development time ahead of that and as sufficient forewarning as possible so that we've got a test environment and you know, sufficient time for us to get to work with whatever the specification or system that's being developed. So it's really just to highlight that buffer between when something's released and when it's expected to go live.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan. Any other comments, questions on that first topic? And if not, let's move to testing.
Which is a really good segue from Jonathan's last comments, I guess. So I've seen some documents, some back and forth, including, I think, one today that was posted on one of the lists about an SMD standard format or something that just came out. But the real question is, when will the registries actually be able to start testing with the clearinghouse, with IBM? Is there an update on that?
Yep, thank you. So there are a couple of facets of that that I'll speak to. First of all, you know, from previous discussions, there's been a strong request to have a, you know, one, obviously, access to the testing environment as early as possible. And secondly, that it'd be, you know, sort of generally available indefinitely for, you know, across all of the launches. So that is what is planned, and I think you guys may have a session with IBM at some point today with the registrars. So I'll let them speak to the actual details. So in terms of testing, there's a test, what's called a sandbox test environment that's available. Gustavo, is it ready currently, or is it almost ready?
It's almost ready.
Okay. So what the sandbox does is it's for the functionality of uploading the list of registered domain names. Correct? Okay. And that's kind of an early look at that. Our opportunity to test that particular functionality. The actual, you know, full production test environment we have, as was presented by Christine yesterday, August 15th as the date for that. The other thing that sometimes people ask about, so there are there's the broad, you know, sort of test environment in terms of testing that all of you want to do for your implementation. There is sometimes when people say testing, what they mean is, you know, what do I have to go through with the clearinghouse operator to ensure that I'm able to operate with them? So, you know, something similar to an OT&E process. And that's something that's being developed as well, and I think would be useful to have a discussion with IBM about.
Okay, thanks, Karen. Jeff, I see your hand up, but yeah, you're right. We are meeting with IBM reps this afternoon at 4:30 in our joint session with the registrars, just so everybody understands that. Thank you for pointing that out. Jeff, go ahead.
Yes, I'm just, so you said the sandbox will be August 15th, or was that two different things? Sorry, I got confused there.
It's two different things. Oh, Gustavo's gonna.
So basically, with the SMDs and the SMD revocation list that I sent in the morning, you can test most of the functionality for the Sunrise. The only thing that you are missing to start testing for the Sunrise is how to upload the learn file. So for that specific interface, we have a sandbox, and we should send the procedures to access that sandbox during this week. So basically, with that, you will have everything that you need to start testing, basically, the full Sunrise implementation. The production testing environment for the Sunrise, that's going to be available on August 15th, as Karen mentioned. Oh, sorry. So basically, with the SMDs and the SMD revocation list that I sent in the morning, with that, you have Well, most of the things that you need to start testing the Sunrise, the only thing that you are missing right now is the interface to test the upload of the alarm file. We are working on that, and we should have that sandbox ready during this week so you can start also testing that part. So by this week, you should be able to test most of the Sunrise functionality with the clearinghouse.
Okay, thank you. Any follow-up questions? Okay, I don't see any, so thank you very much for that. We've got a lot on the agenda here, so let's keep moving through the various topics. I think we're going to set aside the discussion around IDN and IDN variants for the moment, talk about the IBM master agreement and then URS. So I think one of the questions around the master agreement is that we've seen the scopes of work posted, but the governing master agreement has not been posted. So I think that there was some discussion on our list about wanting to have an opportunity to review that. Would anybody else like to add to that? Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, the other, aside from just the master agreement, I think one of the things that we'd like to see is just a document, because it's not in the rights protection mechanism or the requirements, and it's not yet, at least in the T's and C's. I know we're talking about that, so this may be a discussion with in the T's and C's. But what would be really be helpful that we need is we understand what the obligations are to ICANN, but we don't necessarily understand what the obligations are to the registries, and more importantly, an operational document. So, for example, who do I call when I have issues? What are the obligations owed to me? How will tickets be responded to? What's the ticketing system like? What's the escalation procedure? Will there be root cause analysis? All of those types of things. That document's not, that there's no information about that. I'd actually prefer that to be in the T's and C's where those commitments are made. Of course, those commitments would be made by ICANN, and I guess you'd be passing through what you get from IBM. But I think that's really kind of the operational document we want to see so that I can give to my engineers and my customer support, because if something goes down, if there's problems, we need to know what the appropriate resolution would be.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. Chuck, I saw your hand.
Thanks, Keith. Chuck Gomes. My comments are a little bit more general, but I certainly reinforce what Jeff just said. At a time when the ATRT2 is going on, it's really baffled me why there's been so little ability with regard to the early
Yeah, so in terms of what's posted, the goal in the structure where different sets of customers are moving along, interacting face. Yeah.
Karen? Okay, Jeff, over to you, URS.
Thanks. This is Jeff Newman. On the URS, there was a document that was posted. I'm getting my days mixed up. I want to say maybe last week that called for a standard in communications between the registries and the URS provider. I think it may have covered some other things as well. And it was proposed as a proposed standard. And the standard included things, additional requirements like you must send emails in encrypted form via S over MIME. I may not be saying that right. But my question back to the list, we're constantly getting documents from ICANN staff or technical staff with these new, quote, standards, which require additional development and... my question back was, a basic, well, why do we need this? Why do we need a new standard? And what's the intention behind sending at this late date a standard? And so I just wanted to bring up for the group that this is something we need to consider. Some of us may be intending to deal with the URS on a manual basis as opposed to an automated basis, because some of our TLDs are going to be so small that building an automated tool to deal with communications with the URS provider just seems to be a lot of time and resources without necessary benefit. So I guess my comment is really that before ICANN publishes this came without any kind of notice or anything. So before ICANN publishes something that it wants to be a standard, it really should communicate to the registries that this type of thing is coming, ask whether this should be a standard or not. And from my perspective, anything that's proposed as a technical standard should really go through the appropriate standards track with something like the IETF, where that's where standards are kind of made and developed. Otherwise, I think what the important thing really is that ICANN should be telling us and reminding us of what our obligations are as opposed to how we meet those obligations. I think the how question, we'd love guidelines. I mean, if you have guidelines or certain advice on how to do things, that's great. That's fantastic. But as opposed to something that you want as a proposed standard, that should really go through appropriate kind of mechanisms. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Gustavo, go ahead. Thank you.
Yeah, Jeff. Gustavo from ICANN. So the idea of this document is not to create a standard per se. It's basically we are just trying to specify how you can translate the requirements from the applicant guidebook to the technical specification that you have in your SRS, in your registry system. But basically what we have defined, I mean, you can do that manually or you can do that automatically. I mean, it should work both ways. And the thing is, we create this document because basically we have questions regarding how URS works, how you can translate those requirements in the applicant guidebook to something that is meaningful technically, from the technical perspective. That was the idea to generate that document.
And thank you. I appreciate this. This is Jeff again. I appreciate that. And I think maybe it was partially the tone, because I guess in the documents that you write, it was registry must do this and registrar must do that. And so I think if it's intended, if you had posted something like an FAQ document to say, hey, we've gotten these questions and these are things that we recommend. I even talked to a URS provider last night and had asked them, is this something, the whole S over MIME encrypted email. I asked them, was this their requirement? Was this something that they wanted? And they said, no, they were just as surprised. And then the other question I asked you back was, because I understand that you were trying to solve a perceived problem that you were trying to solve, and then I asked a question which I still haven't gotten a response to, which was, is this really a problem? And I noted that in the UDRP, it's never been an issue where a UDRP provider has been duped by someone trying to pose as a UDRP provider, nor as a registrar been duped. And so my question was, I understand that it may be a good idea in theory to do encrypted email, for example, but if there's not really a problem yet, I'm not sure why we need a solution. So those are the types of things. And the reason I ask and the reason is our systems, and I'm sure most of the others, they're already built for the most part. And when you introduce new things, we now have to go back to our engineers and say you have to build it this way. And, it creates a lot of issues internally.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions or comments on this topic before we move on? Okay, thank you. All right, so we'll move on to the next bucket then, which is the discussion around the PIC-DRP. I know that there have been ongoing conversations between NTAG working group members and ICANN staff, maybe, I don't know if Staten, if you'd like to provide a bit of an update around the PIC-DRP discussions, and then let's try to focus on any specific questions that we have sort of outstanding for ICANN at this point.
Sure, Keith, thanks. Sure, thanks. This is Staten Hammock with United TLD. So by way of background, members of the NTAG created a working group to work on a proposal we could give to ICANN to refine and make some proposed changes to the proposed PIC DRP process. And so that developed into a sort of negotiating team, if you will, and we've had some very good exchanges with ICANN staff regarding what we would like to see revised in the currently proposed PIC DRP model process. Chiefly, we are emphasizing that we would like ICANN to own the PIC DRP process, essentially. Right now, as it's drafted, there is this opportunity for third parties to bring complaints, and there's a very elaborate process devised to deal with that and farm that sort of adjudication to a third-party provider. And what we would like ICANN to reconsider is owning that process from a compliance standpoint in terms of being the party bringing the complaint and being the party enforcing whatever whatever the appropriate outcome is of that process. So we had a productive meeting just a few days ago. Currently where things stand is the working group is, ICANN asked the working group to work on some language that we would like to see revised in the currently proposed DRP process, and we're currently working that.
Okay, thanks very much, Staten, and thanks to you and to that team for all the work that you've put into this. So just to clarify, the next steps are to provide language or still working up the language to provide?
Yes, that's right. We I'd hope we'd get the language over to you, Cyrus, by now, but we're still working on it. But hopefully we'll have something to you later today.
Okay, great. Thanks, Staten. Tim Switzer, go ahead.
Tim Switzer. So just a quick question. I mean, is there general receptivity to this concept as far as coming back as long as we can get the proper language? Is there general agreement from ICANN on this concept?
Okay. Thanks, Tim. Great question. Cyrus, is that something you'd like to address?
Actually, I'll let Krista handle that. This is Cyrus.
Thanks. This is Krista. So just a point of clarification, Staten, was something you said. At least my understanding from the conversation we had the other day was that the direct enforcement that you guys were talking about was in with respect to Part 3 of the Spec 11, which is the mandatory picks, if you will, as opposed to the voluntary picks, which are things that people submitted a couple months ago. Is that?
Well, during our conversation, we didn't distinguish between the voluntary and mandatory picks. We were just talking about picks in a general sense.
Okay. To answer your question directly, Tim, it's like all things that I can, complicated. and we're definitely considering, you know, what was discussed in the meeting, and we kind of want to see the language, and then we want to take that under evaluation. So it's not no, it's let's look at the language and see where we can go from there.
Yeah. And I, this is Cyrus. I can add a little bit more to that. I think we are receptive to the outcome of the discussions that actually we had 2 days ago. And by that, I mean, I think on the ICANN side, we're beginning to see the light in the argument that you guys have put forward. So I'm very optimistic that once we see your language, actually, we can use that as a foundation to find a way out of it that makes both sides happy.
Okay. Thank you, Cyrus, very much for that. And Krista, go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to, I want to thank our negotiating team for doing that work. I don't know if anyone in the room wants to speak up, but this is really, really a critical issue, and I just want you to get that point across. It's not just the negotiating team, but this is something, whether they're a brand, a generic, a IDN, a community, a geo, I mean, universally, this has been a huge, huge issue, and in fact, to the point where there are a number of registries that said that they can't go forward at all if that is not changed.
This is Cyrus. Thank you, Jeff. I think I'm very sensitive to all the intricate issues that are involved in terms of what we have proposed versus what the concerns are that have come back on the part of the negotiating team on behalf of all the interested parties. And I guess I would reiterate the point that I'm very optimistic that we can find a way out of it that would satisfy both sides.
Okay, this is Keith. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Cyrus. Chuck, I see your hand. Go ahead.
Thanks, Keith. Chuck Gomes. And I appreciate the receptivity there. There's a lot of emphasis right now on responding to GAC advice, and I understand that. I appreciate that. But one item of GAC advice that happened some time ago was that there should not be any material changes to the applicant guidebook after applicants applied. And the PIC spec, in particular the mandatory portion of it now, is a huge material change to what applicants applied for. As it's worded now, it would probably cost registry operators several thousand dollars, probably more like tens of thousands of dollars, every time they had to hassle with one of these things that may be frivolous. And there's nothing in there right now to prevent that. So I'm really glad that that staff is looking at that very seriously, because it's a very material change to what applicants applied for. I didn't care for it in the voluntary part of the PIC specs that was first proposed, but at least applicants had an opportunity to step up to that and see, you know, what was there and make a decision. The rest of us who didn't do the voluntary PIC specs, you know, to have that hoisted on us is a huge change, and so I certainly encourage a serious look at that, and let's make it something that makes sense from a business point of view. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Chuck. Any other comments or questions around PIC DRP before we move on? Okay, I don't see any. I don't see any hands in chat in Adobe, so let's go ahead and move on then. Next bucket is pre-delegation testing. We had an update yesterday evening on pre-delegation testing, and Ken, go ahead.
No, go ahead and make your statement, and I have the statement. I'll make it
update. Okay, I was moving on to the next bucket to see.
Right,
if, okay, I'm going to open it up. Who wants to talk about pre-delegation testing? Ken.
I may need some. I may need some help from the group here, because sometimes this issue is, because the technical side is something that becomes a little deep sometimes. So I'm going to kind of go over this. You guys have made some proposals regarding some processes, namely one of them being the searchable who is, where you're imposing in this pre-delegation testing process a specific who is a searchable who is process that frankly doesn't appear to have any real basis in the RFCs, and it was never included in any of the requirements that in the draft applicant guidebook. And there's been discussions about the fact that these requirements were not included in the registry agreement, the guidebook, or any RFC. Also, I'd like to find out if any of the other registries have concerns about the fact that the specific searchable who is requirements that ICANN is requesting in this pre-delegation testing is of a concern to them. I mean, there's no, to me, it does not appear to be a strong basis for it. It's kind of like, well, we didn't require it as part of the registry agreement, and we didn't require it in the guidebook, but now we've decided we want it done this way. Okay. Am I making sense here?
Thanks, Ken. Appreciate it. And we can open this up to anybody who wants to contribute. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, so I can go over, I guess, for the rest of the group here. There were comments, some comments that I made yesterday during the pre-delegation testing session, that there are certain things that the pre-delegation tester, I guess, .sc, has made requirements to pass some of their tests that are not, as Ken said, they're not specified in the guidebook, in the contract, or in a relevant RFC or an applicable RFC. Things such as, and I'll just, I know you guys responded to me, so I'm, but I'm just repeating for the rest of the group, but you know, one of the examples I pointed out was that the PDT provider had referenced a, in one of our tests, they had referenced that our WHOIS output was not in conformance to an XML standard put out by the W3C. And they were not willing to pass us at that point because it wasn't in compliance. And, you know, my response to that was, so what? It's not in the guidebook. It's not, you know, in the contract. And there are probably, I mean, and Russ and Francisco know this because we've gone back and forth, probably 150 different emails back and forth on the number of elements in the testing that aren't in one of those three places. So there's another example where the RFCs actually conflicted with what was in the contract. Now, we fixed some of those elements that were in the contract, in the last version of the contract. But there are still yet other areas of testing that are subjective, and what we don't have, and I know it's one of the items under here, is we don't have a clear document that outlines the pass-fail criteria on a number of the items. And I'll give you an example. In the self-certification, it asks you, and I may be saying this the wrong way, so the technical guys, I hope you understand the gist of what I'm trying to say. But basically, it's a load test result. And what you would say is, this is the expectation of the volume of queries I'll have in my TLD, and this is the capacity, and the capacity could be 100 times that or 1,000 times that or, you know, we don't know what the right answer is. We don't know that the evaluator is going to go, well, your capacity is 1,000 queries per whatever, and your TLD will be 1,000 queries per whatever, and your capacity is 1,000,000. Well, we don't know going in, is that passing? Should it be 10 million? Should it be 100 million? There's no criteria that we have, no predictability to know that that type of thing will pass. And it's going to be some subjective determination. And what we're asking for is just some certainty going into the test that what we put in there will pass.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Ken, I think you had a follow-up. Go ahead.
Yeah, this kind of ties into the second point here and the fact that we're saying we really need a document that clearly defines the exact PEPs. You want to respond first, and I'll come back.
Can I just interrupt you? So maybe because they're two different issues, I don't want to forget your searchable WHOIS one. So maybe we can try and answer that one first, and then come. Would that help, or do you want to?
No, because it all ties into the second one. Okay. So why don't you, if you want to respond to Jeff, then I can respond after you. Okay.
I think go ahead and respond. Yeah. Sorry, this is Russ
Weinstein. Concern is that we really need a clear outline of the criteria required for pass and fail. But more importantly, if the criteria that is being includes issues that such as the searchable WHOIS requirements that are not included in any of the requirements that are imposed either in the agreement or in the guidebook, then we need the logic and the understanding and the basis for imposing that criteria. Coming along and saying, well, you know, we just think it's a good idea doesn't make a lot of sense because a lot of people have been building back-end infrastructures for 12 to 18 months based on a certain set of assumptions. All of a sudden now, somebody is pulling out an entirely different set of specs and saying, well, we know it's not been discussed here beforehand, but we think it's best, and if you don't modify them to comply with our specs or our requirements, we're not going to pass you. So all of a sudden now you've got to go back and write code, change all the agreements you might possibly have with people that you're providing registry back-end services for, or if you're an applicant who has, let's say, a small technical staff, this could be a major hurdle and could, you know, I just don't see the logic behind that. That's
Thanks, Ken. Actually, I think that's very clear. Russ, do you want to respond now? Thanks.
Sure. I'll probably let Francisco take the searchable who is one.
Hi, this is Francisco. So on the searchable quiz, I think there are a couple of things there. Just wanted to clarify that searchable quiz is only tested for those applicants or registries at the time that included that in their application. And therefore, it will be included in their Exhibit A to the registry agreement. So it's not tested for everyone, only those that say they were going to do it. The other thing, as Jeff mentioned, there is this issue of requesting compliance with some things that are not part of the specification. And we have talked with that about that with the provider, and that is going to be fixed, that things like requirements to compliance with W3C standards, that should not be there. Thank you.
And then this is Russ Weinstein, I can. On the topic related to where do we draw the lines and what are the thresholds and things, I think we do need to work through that, because providing data, if we don't have a threshold, there's no real value to it. You could just provide anything and say that it's sufficient on your belief, and then what's the real point? Why did we even bother asking for it? It seems like a lot of work to go create all those documents if it doesn't mean anything. So I think we do need to have those conversations. We had some thresholds in mind. We were actually talking about this morning. But then we get into the catch-22 of if we decide a threshold and we want to, then how do we know it's the right threshold that you guys are comfortable with? So given the time period, I'm not sure what the right way to have this conversation is, but I think we recognize we need to put in some thresholds into the specs for the things like the self-certifications, and we don't want to make it we don't want it to be arbitrary, but we don't want it to be create additional failures or anything like that.
Okay, thanks, Russ. And it sounds like there's an opportunity there for maybe some dialogue around a couple of, you know, or a handful of these issues. And to the extent that I think that applicants and back-end providers can come up with the specific issues, the specific examples where we're having problems, that would be helpful to you. So I would suggest that, you know, we, you know, sort of take an action item to work through that, but also to have a process in place so applicants can, you know, reach out and contact you and say, look, these are the issues that we're having, and we need to resolve them. I saw Jeff and then Ken, but let's try to keep this, and then Chuck, let's keep this brief.
Sure, and I understand kind of the reluctance or the difficulty in coming out with this, but in the end, the tester is going to test it. They're going to make a decision, is that sufficient? And so we should know what the tester is going to use, or the rationale, the criteria, or the least of the circumstances that they consider. It's weird to go into a test and not know what is going to be tested or how it's going to be evaluated. And the second thing, just on the searchable who is, I think there may be two issues in there, or one issue that we didn't cover, which is actually a broader issue and didn't actually surface until some of us did the testing with searchable who is. Which is the notion of technically under searchable who is, you're supposed to get a list of domains on any item that you search, including searching by registrar. And if you search by registrar, you could in theory get the entire customer list of an entire registrar. So the public can go in and say, oh, okay, I want to search by GoDaddy, and then get the entire list of all of the names that GoDaddy owns for that TLD, and that is an issue not just for registries but also for registrars. But I understand that, you know, since then, since that discussion, what's come back is that you are allowed to put reasonable limits on the results that are returned, so as to not have to turn over an entire customer list. So I think that problem's been mitigated.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. Ken, did you have one follow-up?
Well, no, just 30 seconds. Thank you for giving me the clarity there, Jeff. My concern is that as we move forward, we used a set of assumptions for searchable who is that existed, that used the existing technologies and RFCs and requirements. Now all of a sudden, somebody else has decided that their definition of searchable who is includes a set of requirements that isn't necessarily covered in the existing RFCs or in any of the agreements. So we need to be able to make sure that we don't get into a situation where the guidelines that are given to us are in conflict with what we normally would expect this to be.
Okay, thanks, Ken. Francisco, I saw you wanted to respond, and then I've got Chuck in the queue.
Thank you, Ken. This is Francisco. So the test on searchable who is done based on the register agreement. It's on section 1.10 of specification 4 that describes how the searchable who is should work. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Chuck?
Thanks, Chuck Gomes. Keith and I in particular, have received lots of comments from our technical team on this particular issue. Issues keep coming up. EPP commands and commands that are not going to be used by a particular registry. There are lots of optional commands in EPP. But I guess my general observation is I'm amazed at how poorly defined this process is. We're learning as we go, and there's always going to be some of that, but this seems to be just the main thing that's happening. It wasn't planned out well. I'd like to think that it wasn't a bad choice of the provider because SE has a great reputation. Does that mean then that it hasn't been managed properly or that they were not given the information they were needed? My guess is that if we would have all worked on this together a long time ago instead of trying to do it top down, we'd be in a lot better off position right now. So what's happening, we're having to fix it as we go. And that's just a terrible way to do it. We're stuck there now. But I hope we learn from this.
Okay. Thanks, Chuck. Any other questions or comments on this issue before we move on? Cyrus has to leave momentarily. So I don't know, maybe I could just open it up and see if there are any other business that we want to raise before Cyrus has to go. I think, Krista, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to see if you guys had any other business, and then I had something I wanted to add.
Okay. Just one thing, and maybe, Krista, this is what you're going to talk about, but if not, Cyrus suggested that we try to schedule more regular meetings, more regular interaction between the stakeholder group, NTAG, and ICANN staff. So I think something that we'll want to talk about during our stakeholder group business section is the possibility of possibly inviting ICANN staff to participate in a portion of our biweekly meetings on a regular basis so there's more regular interaction and dialogue on various topics. So I appreciate that suggestion, Cyrus, and I will certainly take that up. I think that's a great idea. Krista, go ahead.
What you just said. It's Krista. Yeah, I just wanted to open it up or put it out there that I think that some sort of regular discussion, whether it's your stakeholder group meeting or a separate meeting that we have at some regular cadence would be if it's helpful to you guys, we would, be more than happy to do that. I feel like the communication's been a little bit broken, and maybe that's our fault. But I think the open dialogue is helpful to everybody. It's definitely helpful to us, and we want to be able to continue that in whatever way that makes sense. And so there's two. I think there maybe is even two tracks of dialogue: one's with the stakeholder group itself, and maybe one's with the NTAG. I'm not sure, but we're looking to you guys to tell us what you need, and then we'll figure out how to try and make that happen.
Great. Thank you very much, Krista. I appreciate that sincerely. Okay. Do we have any other business that we want to raise with ICANN staff before they have to leave us? Anybody in Adobe? Let's see. Yeah, Tim, go right ahead, and then Jeff.
Tim Switzer. Just in advance, I want to thank you for your planned participation in the NTAG meeting tomorrow. I appreciate that you're going to be there, and I think that'll make the discussion very productive. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Tim. Jeff?
Yeah, I mean, before Cyrus leaves, I just want to thank him and his team for, you know, making the effort to reach out to us and have this dialogue. I think it's really important. One of the things, and I know the organization is still growing, the GDD organization, and one of the things that will be helpful in the coming weeks is to just understand who specifically at ICANN we refer specific issues to. So, for example, with Neustar, if it's an issue with .biz, this is the person, the single point of contact we go to first, or if it's a new TLD issue, this is the person we go to. So just some, and I know it's still all kind of developing and your staff is growing, but so it'll be fluid, but it would be helpful for the group to just know who is the appropriate person to go to for whichever issue we have.
So I just wanted to thank you, Keith, and the stakeholder group for the opportunity for us to be here. I think we had a lot of good dialogue. I took a lot of notes. And that indicates to me that I think, as you were pointing out, Keith, and Krista pointed out, that we need to have more regular communication so that these issues don't just pop up in, you know, ICANN meetings every 3, 4, 5 months or so. So I'm very much in support of actually setting up an opportunity for us to participate in your get-togethers, bi-weekly, I think you mentioned, and I'll commit to be there myself so that I can learn from you, and we can also feed back to you what it is that we're thinking and start the communication channel opened up that way so that issues like pre-delegation testing and all these other things that came up are not surprises to us or to you. In terms of, you know, having ambiguity in terms of who to go to when you have issues, we'll endeavor to actually publish an org chart with levels of responsibilities and roles. But in the meanwhile, if there are any questions or any issues, you're definitely welcome to just contact me, and I'll commit to make sure that either get you the answer or find the person that has the answer that can get it to you for sure. So thank you again for having us participate here.
Thank you very much, Cyrus. I did see two more hands, if you have just another minute. Adrian, and then we've got another question here.
Yeah, thanks, Cyrus. Adrian Kinders from International Domain Registry. Just to follow on from what you said then, I'm not sure whether it's in your plans to do so, but to have some sort of welcome kit upon signing and some introductions. Obviously, we're very familiar with the industry. But I imagine that as you progress, you're going to be have new registries joining to have something that explains some of the ICANN world and you know, contact. Your normal sort of CRM approach would be beneficial, I think. It's been 4 days and you haven't contacted us yet. I'm worried. second one is a drum that you'll be familiar with me beating, and that is the one of internationalisation. We posted a letter to ICANN regarding the timing of new GTLD webinars and the fact that they tend to fall. Mike Pallage, you're listening? Good. They tend to fall within the US business hours. And we gave examples historically of how lack of time zone variance there'd been. A little frustrating that we didn't get a response at all from that. Number one, and number two, if we could take a look at the issue itself and ensure that we are striving for internationalisation of ICANN, and you'll hear a little bit more about that from me as we continue through the week. Thanks.
This is Cyrus. Thank you, Adrian. I did see your letter, and I think it's quite legitimate. It does pose some logistical challenges for us in terms of do we actually conduct a webinar in the middle of the night in Los Angeles or U.S. time or such. The flip side of it is that we actually record all the webinars and they're available to people who obviously are not there at a convenient time in the time zone that they're in. We continue to look for better options to accommodate everyone, but being the global organization that we are and all that, someone always is going to end up sort of with the short end of the stick, so to speak. But if you have ideas that you think could resolve it well for us, we're all ears. Please let us know. We hear you, but I'm not sure if there is an amicable solution to it that at least I'm aware of.
Okay, so I'm sorry, Donna, quick follow-up, and then we've got one last question before they leave.
So, Cyrus, we did provide options in the letter. So
we are trying to work with you to, you know, provide some solutions. So I think we wrote this letter almost 2 months ago now. So some response would be appreciated.
So, sorry, Keith, to interrupt. I just wanted to follow up to the first part of Adrian's question, or his first question. So, Adrian, Krista Papik. Hi, Adrian. As far as welcome kit goes, so that we're definitely developing that. We will have materials that explain sort of all the things you need to do. And I think that you'll be hearing from us shortly. And as far as you signed your contract, moving on to PDT. And just for the record, it's only been 3 days.
Thanks, Krista. And we have one last question. And please identify yourself for the purposes of the transcript. Thank you.
Hi, T.H. Nguyen, Artemis, applicant for .secure. This question is for staff relating to GAC advice and Spec 11. So for the 6 safeguards that apply to all new GTLDs and the concomitant number 3 in Spec 11, just wondering what the bar would be for complying with that and if there's plans for staff to define what that bar is or GAC. I know that the PICTRIP working group is working on what happens when you fall below that bar, but just wondering what that bar is and what the process would be for defining it.
Okay, thank you. Great question. Any response at this point?
Yeah, this is Cyrus. I don't know if I have a good answer for you, TH, yet. I'm hoping that we get to that during our discussions that are continuing. Sorry, I don't have a better answer for you right now.
Okay. Sorry, one more? Josh?
Sort of a quick follow-up. With regarding to the Category 1 strings, can ICANN offer any sort of timeline when the board will have a response to the GAC or next steps?
So I'm afraid that the board actually hasn't given us a timeline. It's really driven by the board itself. So no, I can't really speculate, to be honest.
Okay, thanks everybody, and thanks very much to Cyrus and his team for being here for just over an hour with us. We really appreciate it. Thank you. All right, let's keep moving ahead with our agenda. Next on the list is an update from the NTAG. So over to you, Mr. Switzer.
Thanks, Keith. Tim Switzer. In the interest of time, I mean, quite honestly, a lot of the very same issues we're talking about here today is what we're going to be focused on. We are having our NTAG meeting tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. What's interesting is I think between the sessions that ICANN has held and the discussions today, a lot of the same topics are going to be discussed tomorrow, but I think it will be beneficial to give the chance for all of the members of NTAG to have additional input. And again, it'll be good to have the ICANN team there to assist in that. I would also just take the opportunity to make sure everybody knows that wasn't at some of the sessions yesterday that the Trademark Clearinghouse ICANN meeting that was scheduled for 8 a.m. tomorrow morning was moved to 11 a.m. So and it's now 2 hours versus 1 hour. So that'll be right after the NTAG meeting. So other than that, we'll go through all that tomorrow. Thank you.
Great. Thanks very much, Tim. Okay, so we have a break scheduled in 5 minutes, but there's a couple of other items that we haven't gotten to yet on our agenda. I think we can fit in at least one, if not two more. I'm actually going to skip down and ask Chuck to give us an update on the IGO-INGO PDP working group. I don't think David's on the phone, is he, or on Adobe? Okay, so Chuck, if you don't mind.
Thanks, Keith. Chuck Gomes, and David is our primary registered stakeholder group rep on that, but we've both been cooperating together on it, so I'll do my best here. First of all, we need to finish a vote on our comments because the comments have to be posted by Keith tomorrow. So I would suggest that we try and do that right now, and then I, after after we do that, I have one other comment on that and a general status of what's going on. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Chuck. So, Paul, you want to take that, or Sherry?
I second the motion for the vote.
All right. So Chuck makes the motion. Paul seconds the motion. So let's go ahead and complete the vote on the draft comments on the IGO-INGO. Sherry, if you wouldn't mind. Thank you.
Not at all. For those registries who have not voted it as yet, New Star?
Can you just very briefly go over what our position is?
Sure. This is Chuck, and that's coming from the former chair of the drafting team that worked on this. Be glad to, Jeff. Our position is basically to support the reservations or protection. Let me word it correctly. Protection of the Red Cross and IOC names according to the list of the provided by the GAC at the top and second level. Top may not be terribly necessary at this stage, but future rounds it would be if this becomes a consensus policy. We're also supporting protection for IGO names, and by the way, in both cases, full names, not acronyms. We're supporting protection of full names of IGOs, again, according to a finite list provided by the GAC at the top and second level. Okay, we are not supporting the protection of acronyms in our statement here, and I'm gonna add a new wrinkle that's been added to that, but it won't affect our statement. So let me do that after we take care of the vote. Okay, just got that one yesterday. We are not supporting protection for INGO names in any form, except for the Red Cross and the IOC. They're INGOs. We're supportive of an exception procedure for organizations that have similar names like Olympic. Okay, in that case, that's a classic example. So that procedure would have to be developed, but an exception procedure so that if there is an organization that has legitimate rights that conflicts with those protected names, there would be a way to pursue that and have that happen. And we're also supportive of possibly using the Trademark Clearinghouse in a little different form, not just trademark. Let's deal with that after we deal with the basic vote, and then. Ken, did you have a question?
Well, no. First of all, I wanted to thank you guys for managing the effort in the endurance contest there for us. And I do have a comment about how to handle the UPU. Thank you.
particular
comment periods. That gives.
I have a concern about that.
Okay.
Our afternoon attendance is very different than our morning attendance.
All right, fair point. Well said, Chuck. All right, so let's go ahead and do it now, though, unless anybody has any concerns. Jeff, did you have anything else you wanted to say? I see you.
No, I'm ready to perched. Vote. I think I was first to vote. So.
All right, very good.
But the only thing, it applies to existing.
Is the initial report.
So one of those, Muse Doma, Carrie Karp normally votes with the majority. So I will follow up with him. Sita is not on the call, nor are they present. Employee Media, Ray Fassett on Adobe Connect indicates he's in favor. Puntkat. Do we have you in the room? They are not in attendance. Trailance normally votes with the majority, so Byron is not here today, nor is he on Adobe. Dot Asia, Edmund, are you able to? Support? Thank you. ICM Registry? I do not believe they were attending the meeting, nor do I see them on Adobe Connect, but they also vote with the majority. We have someone who's raised their hand in Adobe Connect. Keith, did you?
I saw a hand up, but now it's not there.
Okay. And Carrie Karp has indicated on Adobe.
Now I have a question. We have a couple new members. Did I understand that we're going to allow them to vote? I mean, I'm fine with that.
Yes. So I can go around in alphabetical order. We would have CORE. Not voting, that's right. Thank you. Donuts?
Donuts votes yes.
Thank you, John. Congratulations.
First vote.
That ought to be a memorable one. And International Registry Services. Did I get that right? Just wanted to say ARI, I'm sorry.
IDR supports.
Thank you very much.
Well, while Sherry's tallying there to save time, let me jump right in. The GAC and the board talked about the issue of acronyms. By the way, this is Chuck for the recording there and the transcript. And the board put forth some options to dealing with acronyms. As some of you know, the board wasn't real fond of including acronyms, but the GAC has asked for acronym protection. And also the Red Cross has now come back with a broader list of names, although they did introduce that sooner, to be fair to them. So that may come up later. But with regard to acronyms, and we don't need to just talk about this now, nor does it affect our statement, but one of the ideas that was thrown out is to not just include acronyms in total, but rather to possibly include a subset of acronyms that are particularly meaningful as acronyms, not acronyms for all IGOs, okay? So and the Red Cross has never really been pushing for the acronym issue very much, and the IOC. But anyway, that will come up later. David and I will keep you informed on that. At this point, we're not supporting acronyms. We'll bring it back to the group depending on what direction that goes. And obviously that would require some procedure and criteria for doing that, but we'll come back to you on that. Oh, and then last of all, before Sherry gives the results, tomorrow there is a session. It's going to be a very participatory session on this issue. There's going to be four categories of questions that are going to be talked about, and so I encourage all of you to participate in that session if you don't have three or four other conflicts at that time.
Great. Thanks very much, Chuck. And, you know, echoing Ken's comments, thanks to you and David for all your hard work on this topic on our behalf. Sherry, are you ready? I know it changes the math a little bit with regard to majority and supermajority, right? With the addition of the new
but
members.
But we're fine.
Go on.
This,
thank
yeah.
you.
So the outcome of the votes, 13 support, 1 against, 2 not voted. So we have 16 who responded.
And just for
to
clarity,
be fair, Uniregistry supports.
This is Chuck. How did you include CORE? Because I don't think they would count in they didn't count in any
no.
way in that. Okay,
no.
thank
Do
you.
Do you want me to leave the room?
No. Yeah, will you leave, please?
We have, for purposes of this vote, 16 voting members, and that was the result.
Great. Thank you very much, Sherry, and thanks, everyone.
Thank you. And I believe we do need to take a little bit of a break right now, Keith,
yep.
For purposes of transcript and recording.
Very good. So, everybody, we will take a 15-minute break now, so let's please all reconvene at 20 minutes to the hour. Thank you.
Thank you.